Francois Vignol, so welcome to Care Alive. My name is Kenzie Rock, and today's episode is one of my very special ones. We have a very special guest joining us from England, Chris Tetrault-Blay, an author venturing in horror and children's playbooks. But before we begin, remember to follow us on our socials at Podcast by Kenzie and Kenzie underscore Rock 100 on Instagram. You can also find me on Twitter at KenzieRock100, Snapchat at me at KenzieRock. Okay, so tell us your story. Who is Chris Blay?
So I live in the UK. I'm an author. It's more of a sort of hobby sideline. I started writing back in 2013. And just had some ideas for some short stories. I wrote mainly horror fiction to begin with. So for the first few years I wrote, I think it was 5 novels, a couple of novellas, 3 full-size novels in the horror genre. A mix of being independently published and self-publishing. So I was sort of delving in a bit of both. But I didn't really set out to be a writer, to be fair. I got an idea. It all came round about back in the summer 2000. I found out she was pregnant, and it just sort of started a bit of an urge in me to start writing stuff down. Don't know why, really. I just thought I would write like a diary of the months leading up to till the time my children arrived. You know, I felt like I had stuff that I really needed to just get down on paper. And I was a fan of horror fiction, horror games, heavy metal music, sort of, you know, the darker side of things. And just naturally, as I started to write, ideas for stories came to me, which I thought I'd have a go and just see if I'd write a couple of ideas down. That they would started off, I was trying to write short stories, with view of maybe sending them off, putting them on a blog or something. But a couple of them seemed to just sort of take on a life of their own, and I managed to put them together into what became my first novel, which is called Acolyte. And I expanded that to be a full trilogy. It was called the Wildermore Apocalypse Trilogy. So I had 2 more parts that I wrote afterwards, as well as just trying to... I still tried to write horror short stories. That was really my aim to begin with, was to be a bit like H.P. Lovecraft, Edgar Allan Poe, those kind of ones where they had really successful, creepy short stories. And so I did a little bit more on the side while I was writing my trilogy, and I had enough stories in the end to put together into like a small anthology. I did 2 little novella anthology releases. And yeah, it really just took off from there. To be fair, I got published my first book. I worked on over the course of about a year, and then in early 2015, I happened to find an ad popped up on Facebook for an independent publisher in the UK. They were asking for submissions. I sent off the manuscript I had for my first book, and they came back within sort of a couple of weeks and offered to take it on. So that's really where it began.
So Chris, like every other growing author in this century, I've seen that you've dabbled into self-publishing. Kindly tell us how that is going out for you, and how well you're seeing it as.
It was more for another sort of creative outlet for me. I never sought to... I mean, it'd be great if I could make like, you know, loads of money and a big name off myself, you know, by doing it all myself. But it was more, once I got my first book published, I wanted to have almost like a little bit more sort of creative control. So I had the stories, I was learning how to edit them, put a book together. I stumbled across a website, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, called fiverr.com. It's a great site where if you've got your own business, or you're a writer or a podcast or anything like that, there's some great like graphic designers and creative minds who go on to Fiverr, and they you can like purchase gigs from them to do book covers or voiceovers, that kind of thing. So I with that, and I met a couple of graphic designers through there who came up with a couple of covers for me. So then it really, with the release of my first self-published book, which was called House of Courtney, I was really learning not only still the writing side, but how to put a book together myself. And I was really enjoying having that control and learning more about the industry that way. I was still, my main novels I kept with publishers because I really did value what they could give me in terms of marketing, promotion, sort of wide scale distribution that I still wasn't able to do myself. But I did expand last year. I created a proper publishing company name of my own called Dead Men's Tales Publishing, with view of releasing more material under that sort of, you know, in the future. I've done a couple of titles under that, but it's still very much just myself really learning the industry as best I can, sort of, you know, through experience and advice from other publishers and authors.
So every single writer out there knows that their debut, their very first debut, is what will market them. But what people don't get is that there are a lot of things that are put into your first debut that not so many people are aware of. So what is the one thing, Chris, that you wish you would have known before you began your career as a writer?
Well, I'm still learning, to be fair. I think the one thing is how much time and how much time you should devote to editing. That's really the big thing. It's the one thing I hear that writers and podcasters alike say that they hate most about the process, is when you've actually written or recorded something, it's the part, because you really, it's where you start pulling apart what you've spent time to do. When I was putting together House of Courtney, I wrote the stories. I went back over them for like finding grammatical errors and things like that. But I didn't know enough about how to improve the story, make it stronger, to make it more impactful and more professional looking, before I released it. So sort of early feedback I got from some people were that there was still a lot of work to do in terms of, the stories were good, they were received really well. It was the actual sort of physical side, the editing side, which was letting me down. So if I'd spent a bit more time or known a bit more before I released that first one, probably that would be it, because then I would have probably had a stronger release straight off.
So for the past 5 years, Chris, you have come up with different horror genre books, and also you have one specific children's picture book. So what are some of the great resources that have helped you along the way when coming up or publishing, or when it comes to advertising your special books to the world?
Sort of in terms of, I'd probably attack that on two fronts. So in terms of like inspirational, you know, inspirations for the stories and that, I really draw on, it's a mixture of maybe media, you know, pop culture that I'm into, whether ideas come from films or books. There's a little bit in there. I just try to drop in a bit of sort of personal experiences into the books to make them more sort of realistic, you know, things that have happened to me, things I've said, things I've heard people say or do or whatever. But really, I mean, for me, I'm not much of a, I don't plan my books. I've got a lot of author friends who are very disciplined. They can come up with storyboards in their homes. You know, they do months and months of research before they start a book. I'm not really like that. I'm more sort of impulsive. If I get an idea, I just start writing it. I don't really plan anything out. So, I mean, to me, it's just having space and time to be able to write and get ideas down. And then in terms of putting the book together, going on to the self-publishing side, I suppose, when you get into the physically putting the book together, discovering the beauty of Amazon CreateSpace and KDP, Kindle Direct Publishing as it's now called, that gives anyone really the option of publishing their own work. It's a lot easier than it used to be, a lot more accessible than it used to be to publish yourself. So I think without that platform, I really wouldn't have even gone down the route of being able to publish anything myself, and I'd just be waiting on pick up the work for me. But yeah, so on both sides. In terms of the writing, for me, it is just having time to be able to reflect on any inspirations that come by and being able to write. You know, being a dad and having a full-time job sometimes gets in the way of that. But, you know, I try my best.
From my own personal experience, Chris, I know that writing can be hard. So can you tell me about a moment or a specific time when you had no idea, like absolutely no idea of what you were doing?
Yeah, I'm kind of going through that now. I think when I first started off, the inspiration and the ideas came really easily. I had a lot built up in my mind that I wanted to write about. So it's just a case of just putting it all down. But for the last sort of 6 months, particularly since, you know, coronavirus came along and lockdown came along over here, it's really interfered with my productivity and I'm not as focused as I was before, because there's so much else going on and so much else on my mind that having that time to really focus, you know, sitting down and focus on writing just isn't there at the minute. The thing that didn't help, was when lockdown came along, while I was still in my last job, I started working from home. So my workspace, which would usually be my writing space, became like my home office, and it took on a whole new feel for me. It meant then that whenever I tried to write, I really wasn't in the right frame of mind to do it. Maybe as well, with the horror fiction, I went into children's writing, like you touched on, last year. I've tried to go back to the horror fiction side. I've got a couple of ideas I've been trying to work on for about a year now, and it just doesn't seem to be happening. Whether it's I'm in a different place sort of mentally. When I first started writing back in 2013, I was coming off a fairly rough time in terms of, you know, anxiety and depression because of certain things. And writing was my therapy. Writing was my way of helping overcome that. And I'm not really in that place now. So maybe that's linked to the horror stuff. You know, I have to be in a particular place in my mind, which I'm just not there at the minute. So I'm just trying to let it flow. I'm not trying to force it. You know, it might have been a couple of months since I've done something really meaningful in my mind, but I'd rather wait until the ideas come and it's something decent, you know, rather than trying to force anything through.
So in writing, Chris, we all need inspiration from somewhere in order to come up with a amazing material that everybody will love. It could be from a dream, from your own personal experience. So what is your inspiration when it comes to writing? Because Acolyte, which was a horror genre book, was your first debut. So understand this. What brings the inspiration in you so that you come up with this amazing material?
That was a bit of an amalgamation, I think, of... I've been a horror film fan since I was... I probably shouldn't admit it, since I was probably about sort of 12 years old. And so I kind of grew up appreciating scary stories, scary films, you know, anything from the darker side. So I think when Acolyte came about, it was really a marriage of... odd things that I've seen on screen or read in books. You know, I was very inspired by James Herbert as an author, and his style really grabbed me because he was very direct. Whenever he referenced anything sort of horrific in his books or anything gory, it was just there. It wasn't built up. It wasn't described in great detail. It just kind of happened as if it was an everyday occurrence, and it really did. That really grabbed me. It was quite impactful. So I wanted to write a book that had that same kind of impact, that, you know, someone might pick it up and not really know where it's going until something happens and they're like, okay, I'll stay with this now. This is, you know, this one scene has got my attention. The story was born as well. The idea of the whole trilogy, the Wildermore Apocalypse trilogy, came out of my fascination with not sure if you're familiar with it or not, the 2012 prophecy, or that the Mayans in particular thought the world was going to end in December 2012.
Oh, I heard of that.
Yeah, round about that time leading... it was when, I think, a few years before that, I saw the trailer for the film 2012 that was out, the big blockbuster. I never knew about the prophecy. My wife then explained what the film was referring to. And I got so fascinated by it, I'd read books on it and sort of research it best. as I could, because I, building up to that supposed date in December 2012 that the world was supposed to end, you know, in one sense you're kind of thinking it can't be true, it can't be right, but in the other sense you kind of, it could actually happen. You know, what is going to happen? How if the world's going to end, what is it that's going to happen? And once that date came in 2012 and came and passed, and I was kind of just getting on with my everyday life, and I was like, well, in a way that's a bit anticlimactic. You know, there must be something that's happened that we're not aware of. And the idea came to me that maybe if there was something had happened that started, not necessarily ended the world, but started something that would lead to the end of the world, but somewhere really quite remote, that people, what, you know, nobody was aware of, you know, this event happened somewhere that we're not really focusing on, so we don't know it's happened. So I built this moorland county called Wildermoor, where this event takes place over the course of the three books. And it was really just my take on something that had happened at that time, that it wasn't widespread news, nobody knew it had happened, but eventually it would lead to something that would bring the end of the world. So yeah, a long answer to a short question.
Wow, that's amazing. And in regards to this, actually, we've heard a lot of comments online that others are different things. And one thing that's very common that you'll hear out there is that others are crazy, because we have these crazy, insane ideas, like you said, in our heads, in our hearts, and we just pour it down onto writing. So what are some myths, or just one specific myth that you heard about authors or about writing or about this profession way back before you even started writing, that could have pushed you not to write, or the myth itself could have put you into writing? What is that, Chris?
The myth really is that if you write a book, that you'll quickly be a household name and you'll make a lot of money off of it. I think that's still a myth to me. It can happen. You know, a lot of authors out there have obviously proven it can happen, but I think when I got into it, as soon as I had interest from a publisher, and I knew my book was going to be published, I kind of had these delusions, I suppose, that soon it would be in bookshops and I could give up my job and, you know, I'd be living off writing. And that's still not happened. I've learned along the way how much work goes into, you know, not only writing a bestseller, but getting it recognized by the right people to make it a bestseller. I think that's it. It's not easy. I mean, anyone can pick up a pen or pick up a laptop or whatever and write something that's really, really good, that should be on the bookshelves everywhere and, you know, on screen or whatever. But it's that bit, it's that getting it noticed. It's being able to be seen by the right people before that happens. It's a long process. And a lot of authors don't manage to get there. And I think that's probably it. A lot of people come into it thinking that very quickly they'll be a household name and being able to make a living off of it. It'd be great if we could.
Yeah, that would be nice if that were to happen. So, Chris, was there a point where you had a biggest failure with one of your books, or your book didn't get published or never got great reviews from your readers? Because very few people, like a handful of authors, actually have that great pass of not having a failure. So if you did, tell us what the failure was about. Biggest failure.
Fortunately for me, I suppose, I haven't been battered back by publishers. I've approached sort of independent publishers here in the UK, and I've been published with, I think, three or four of them now. And it's always been sort of at the first, I've always given them something at the first ask that they were interested in. So I haven't gone through that, but I would say probably my self-publishing side, I've put out books, like I might have mentioned right at the beginning with House of Courtney. I loved the book, but it was substandard in terms of, you know, how professional it looked and the finish on it. You know, the work that I didn't realize needed to go into it to make it more professional. So it's probably from that side. I've written, I've got a book out which I've only released as an ebook so far because it's called Poison in the Well, Part One, and it was going to be it's meant to be part of a new trilogy following on from the Wildermoor Apocalypse. And I wrote half the book last year, and this is one that I've really struggled to go back to. So I've released the first half as like I've split it down into a part one, part two, so that I could get the first half out, because I really wanted people to read it. But I've failed in the sense that I'm still trying to work on the second part. So it exists out there in bit form at the minute, but it's not a full story. So I'm really hoping I can get to the point that I finish it. But at the moment, like I say, the inspiration, the idea for the story is there, but the inspiration to actually knuckle down and write it isn't. So I'm kind of hoping that doesn't have a detrimental effect whenever I do get to finish it. Obviously, that's taken so long.
Okay, so there's something very, very confusing to me. Are you from Exeter or Newton Abbot? Because I don't get that concept. I know it's close, but where exactly are you from, or where exactly do you live? Because your website says something different from what I'm aware of.
So I live in Newton Abbot, which is it's about sort of 15-20 miles away from Exeter in Devon in the UK, but I'm actually from Basingstoke, which is about 150 miles east of where I live now. But I was born there. I went I moved when I was 18. I moved further up north to a place called Stoke-on-Trent. I went to university, and then I moved down to Newton Abbot in 2005. So I've been around a bit, but this is my home now, definitely.
Okay, so I can say that you are living close to Exeter, right?
Yep.
And Exeter last year was named as City of Literature in England. So is there any pressure to you that you must live up to the name of Exeter, because famous people are actually from Exeter who are authors, and this could be some pressure to some people. So is there any pressure on your part?
Yeah, probably, to be honest. I mean, I love Exeter. Exeter is my favourite place down this way anyway, so I've got a bit of an affinity to it, and my first three or four books were actually written physically in Exeter, so I've been inspired by the city in that sense anyway. But yeah, definitely, you know, any links to great authors down there. We've also got crime writer Agatha Christie, who's from down there as well, so you know, not small names to live up to, but it definitely gives you inspiration to reach their heights if we can. You know, if I can, brilliant. If not, you know, they've done it for us. So
out there, Chris, there are so many books regarding different parts of England. We have London, we have Scotland, we have Ireland. So what are your thoughts about what these books portray? Maybe from the very few you've read, what are some things that you might think are okay or not okay? Because we are entitled to our comments. So based on England, not any other part of England, just England itself, what do you think these authors out here have portrayed it to be?
That's an interesting one, actually. As a reader, probably haven't read all that many books that are based in England, in English cities and that. They always seem to be sort of further afield. But I think everyone's got their own take on the place. You know, I've written about places that I haven't visited necessarily. I've drawn on either research or other people's like reports on it or anything like that. So I think if it's not, you know, some people, you're always going to have people with different opinions. All different readers are going to read something and think, you know, that's not right, you know, I live there, it's not like that, or you know, that never happened. The beautiful thing about writing is you can put your own perceptions in there, and you can really use it to fit whatever it is that you're writing about. If you're writing something factual, then it is better to have something that is, you know, to really know your stuff and for it to reflect, you know, reality. But at the end of the day, it's the great thing about being a writer. You've got artistic license to change things however you need to. So I would say as a reader, you've always got to keep an open mind that what you're reading about probably isn't exactly what it's like, but everyone's got their own perceptions on what places are like anyway. You have two people in the same city with completely different views on it, which I think, you know, it's all part of diversity now. So
Okay, writing can be a cause for change to most people, and it shapes you into something that you weren't before and makes you something else. So how has your journey as a writer, a self-publishing writer to be exact, shaped you to who you are today as Chris Tetrault Blake?
Wow. It certainly has made me more focused, even though I'm having difficulties, like I say, actually concentrating on the actual physical writing side at the moment. But it's given me like clear ambition. Back when I started writing, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. You know, as a job, I've done, you know, normal everyday jobs that I've had to do, you know, to earn money. But in terms of what I've actually wanted to do, I never really knew. You know, I've gone through life, I wanted to be a rock star, professional wrestler, or, you know, something really, you know, elaborate. But it's discovering writing when I did, you know, helping me out of the dark time that I was in at that point it's made me realize how important it is to me. So it's given me something that I cling on to, you know. Whenever I have ideas, I now know to explore them rather than just kind of ignore them, because in my head I can't do anything with them. It's given me the drive and ambition to do something, even though I might put something out there and only a handful of people might read it, you know, loads of people might read it. I put it out there with the intention of just one or two people discovering it and letting me know that they've liked it. You know, I'm appreciating the process and the therapeutic process for me that writing's given me. And I'm hoping that'll be ongoing. You know, if ever I get to a point that I struggle, you know, mentally with my mental health again, maybe, you know, it can come back. I've got something I can fall back on now to help me through it, you know, which I didn't realize was there before.
What is your vision 10 years from now?
10 years. I would love to just have one of my titles to be well known. I think if I'm going to achieve that, it's probably my children's books that are most likely to do that. Because the children's book that I released last year, called It's a Long Way to the Moon, I've had the most reaction to it from people, you know, across the country and, you know, across the world even. It's been a lot. It's a much more rewarding genre to write for, I think. I'll probably annoy a few horror writers out there, but I think, you know, the children's market, if you can crack it, is absolutely brilliant. But yeah, apart from that, personally, I think I'd love to be a full-time writer to be able to earn enough money off of this. But I think as long as I've got a job, as long as I've got my family, you know, my wife, my kids, you know, we've got a home, they're healthy, they're safe, that's really all I can ask for, especially at the minute. You know, in 10 years' time, if we can be more clear of the madness that's going on at the minute, then, you know, that's really all we can ask for.
This very last question, Chris, is something I've asked myself, something that somebody has asked me, but I didn't have the answer to it then. But when I finally had the answer to it, I felt ever so great about it. So why do you write? Many people give up. Some even don't continue once they run out of ideas. And some, like most of us, just push on and never give up. Why do you write as Chris Tetrault Blake, the author of children's playbooks and horror fictional books?
Right, well, there's no easy answer to that, really. The reason I started writing when I did was, I mean, it's twofold, I guess. Like I say, I had a build-up of things. I just had the urge to write. Something in me clicked when I knew I was going to be a dad. At the time, like I say, I was just writing myself after some, you know, anxiety issues. And physically, the writing helped me. It helped me focus. It helped me. Once I got my thoughts out of my head and onto paper, it's almost like a weight had been lifted, you know. And I think what drives me now, I mean, I've done the horror fiction side, you know, the few years I did on that helped me in that respect, I think, get through the darker point. And I was relating to things that had that had inspired me, that stuck with me from the horror genre over the years. But I think now there has been a shift. I'm shifting more towards, say, the children's books, because they're giving me a different kind of joy. You know, I see the way my kids react to stories that I read them, you know, that they buy. And I think knowing they're appreciated by, I always think the children that read and are read to are the harshest critics. So if you've got a children's book, or if you've got a story that's read by children, you're going to get an honest reaction as to whether you're doing something good. And I've had that. So I think that really spurs me on to continue. You know, if I could get that reaction and that kind of, you know, give that kind of joy to parents and kids as well with my stories, then that will keep me going for as long as I can.
You know, you're quite right about that, Chris, because there is definitely not a very straight answer to that. It would be very different for very many different people.
There's something primitive in writing, I think. I think it's in everyone. It's whether you decide to explore it or not.
Okay, so before we end, Chris, I'd like us to play a little game. It's something I call a plot point quest. So it's a series of six very short questions, and you'll have to answer with a very straightforward answer, like the first thing that pops to your head. So the questions are, once upon a time there was blank, every day blank, one day blank, because of that blank, because of that blank, until finally blank. So are you ready for this, or?
I think so.
Okay, so once upon a time there was
a skeleton.
Okay, every day
he went out in the streets.
One day
he met a dog.
Because of that
the dog ran away with his leg bone.
Because of that
he couldn't walk.
Until finally
the dog came back again.
Okay, that was actually very, very...
Where it came from? I might have to write that one down.
Actually, this is something I do myself when I'm trying to find something to write about. So when I'm running out of ideas, I just do a plot point quest, and then I get something new to write about.
Brilliant. No, I may well do that myself another time and come up with something a little bit more sensical. But no, great, good fun.
So today's guest, ladies and gentlemen, has been Chris Tetrault Play, an amazing author, an amazing father, and an amazing employee to the nation of England. If you want to learn more about Chris, you can find him on his socials at ChrisTV and also on his website. Links will be in the description down below. He's also the host and owner of Dead Men Talk podcast. So all the links will be down below, including my own. Remember to follow the socials, subscribe if necessary, leave a review for both our podcasts at podchaser.com. And I hope to see you next time here on Care Alive. My name has been Kenzie Rock. Wishing you a happy week and a happy Halloween.